And here this evening for this 5-day retreat together. And in this, the opening talk with you, we would like to speak a little bit about the background to the retreat, to speak with you about the ethical guidelines which give support to the days here, a little about the meditations, and other features of this time that we have here together. Sitting beside me is Catherine McGree from England. And Catherine came here last year with her husband, Janai Polsternik, and we were teaching here together. And this week, Janai and Christina Feldman are flying off to East Coast of the United States to teach at our sister center there at IMS in Western Massachusetts. And sitting beside me is Stephen. Many of you will know Stephen Fulda, main architect and inspiration for enabling these retreats during the 90s to get off the ground here, along with the cooperation of several other people. Stephen has been kindly assisting us on the retreats for several years. His home is in Klil village in Western Galilee, and it's the first time I've managed to persuade him to join the two of us on the throne here. And welcome, Stephen. And for myself, it is my sixth visit, annual visit here to Israel, the second time here. The first time was to give some teachings at Stephen's invitation in Klil several years ago, and have had the blessing to come back to Israel every year. So as you can see, I am a true practitioner of the Jewish law of return. And in the talk with you this evening, I do know that there are about four or five people who will need a translation from English into Hebrew. And of course, we are arranging and organizing for that to happen with the talks, with the instructions, small groups, etc. So perhaps that sentence could be mentioned now. Do you think, Stephen? About the opportunity for translation.
Ask first if anyone didn't understand.
Oh, yeah.
Up to this point.
So Stephen said to me, is there anybody here who didn't understand my poor English?
I think he needs to say that in Hebrew.
Yeah, right. That's a good. Very, very good. How would you understand?
Mic is mainly for the
entertainment.
It's not for the recording. I think.
Oh, I see. All right. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Mishu lo mavin ad achshav, ma Christopher, ma bakasha, raise your hand. Arim yad.
Firstly, with you this evening, I would like to speak a little bit about the background to these retreats. And of course, there is a very long-standing historical background to them. And some of the inspiration for that dates back some 2,500 years, of course. And in the East, and specifically in India, the effect and the result of the awakening and the enlightenment of one human being became an inspiration and a resource for many others since. And of course, before the Buddha, before 2,500 years ago, as he himself said, there were enlightened beings walking and living on this earth with profound and deep insight in what it is to be in this world, to be alive, to think, to feel, to act, to breathe, to respond. And a body of teachings were established. Gradually, and all too obviously, a great deal of Buddhism, with the emphasis on the ism, began to wrap around this body of teachings. But today, and here, and elsewhere, there is a genuine effort and genuine attempt being made to try to keep alive the essential core teachings as much as we possibly can for the welfare, for the insight, for the understanding of women and men on this earth. The environment for these situations over 25 centuries has changed a little bit in some ways and hasn't changed in others. It has changed in that initially teachings were often given in public parks in the cities in North India at that time, which had a very thriving commerce, were given in the forest, were given in rural villages, and from that began to be established as the religion began to grow into monasteries housing monks and nuns and men and women who went into solitude and isolation and had small groups of people interested in these teachings. Also through the centuries, and especially in the last century, there has been a recognition of that, of the importance of some aspects of the teachings, and they, as it were, formed together the core kind of emphasis. One, which cannot be substituted, and that is an ethical framework which is of non-harming and non-exploitation. And there is great depth. It challenges us in many, many ways. We will touch upon this during the days with you. A second core feature of the teaching is the importance in life of awareness, of meditation, and of genuinely and truly living as mindful and as conscious a life as possible. And the third aspect of the body of teachings is finding wisdom to deal with living. And one may ask, naturally, what, when you say wisdom, what do you mean? What do you mean by wisdom? What does it mean to live wisely? And the teachings make it extremely clear. When we are suffering, when we are unhappy, when we are anxious, when we are aggressive, when we are arrogant, conceited, selfish, when we are caught up, fear, doubt, problems, in those experiences, in those moments, it shows lack of wisdom. Therefore, the body of teachings point in life to finding wisdom to dissolve problems. When you and I are caught up in the problems of life, and there are obviously many kinds that human beings face, and we are trapped in them, we are stuck in them, and sometimes feel overwhelmed with difficulties, there is a lack of wisdom. And the teachings point to the finding of wisdom. That's the core pointer. If we truly understand what it is to find wisdom in these teachings and to live with wisdom, this is called an enlightened life. Ethics, awareness, depths of meditation, finding wisdom, enlightens a human being's existence. So in these teachings, enlightenment doesn't refer to what Siddhartha Gautama had 2,500 years ago as some special one-off miraculous event. It isn't. It's available for each and every one of you here and now in this room, on this retreat, to know a wisdom which is enlightening. And in as many ways as possible, while we're here together in these 5 days, we try to give the teachings and the practices to make it possible. And those teachings and practices have, if I may say, despite all the ups and downs of Buddhism, nevertheless, the teachings and the practices have a very good track record of contributing to waking people up, to come out of the dream of problematic existence. It isn't easy, that's for sure. But living from one day to the next is a lot harder. So let it be hard to find wisdom rather than hard to go on worrying and suffering. If life is going to be hard, let us make it hard for something worthwhile. How does all of that, long history, more than 100 generations of women and men engaged in these practices, how do we explore that in the time that we are here? You will see very shortly that there is a timetable which is put up, and I expect it's the same here as elsewhere, meaning retreat organizers who do such a wonderful task for the teachers, generally speaking, never send out the timetable for the retreat, not in our retreats, because sometimes people will see the timetable and think, oh my God, this is impossible. I can never survive a day like this. So sometimes we have an idea about ourselves that couldn't possibly. But when you arrive, then you don't have much chance nor choice. And there is the timetable. Because it's summer, and because it's the Mediterranean, and because it's the desert, and it's hot, you have a very special privilege. It's like, in Catholic terms, a papal dispensation. And, in other words, everywhere else on the planet, 12:30 is lunch, 2:30 in the afternoon we start again. But given the heat, and one of the managers sent me an email, Christopher, it is hot here. So we actually start in the afternoon at for these 5 days. Not saying anything about the 5 days afterwards. We'll tell you that time when you come. Well, anyway, so. We start the afternoon at 4 o'clock, so that gives a 3.5 hour period, including the lunch, for people to have a break, have a siesta, etc. And we finish the day a little bit later in the day. So, in fact, the number of hours of meditation, actually, I'm sorry to say for you, don't change. It's just that we've altered the hours a little bit, but a longer rest and a little earlier start to balance. In that, having said that there is a full timetable, we don't put credible amount of pressure, you know, the person to attend every sitting and do absolutely everything. You're adults, it's your life. But there are features of it which are important there. One of them, of course, and it's a very precious one, is the silence. This feature and aspect is vital, and Catherine, Stephen will speak to her a little about this. There are other things as well, and one of my memories of last year, so I quickly add a very small one, was the relationship to the, I can hear it, so the relationship to the air conditioning. Now I remember last year, some people were up and down like a yo-yo. There were those who, there was one camp in the on brigade, and then there was another in the off for the air conditioning there. So this went on, I remember, for two or three days. So eventually the law of authority had to come in, and that, i.e. those who are sitting up here. So we tried to reach a compromise. Basically, if I remember rightly, something like from 11 o'clock in the morning till sometime in the afternoon was when the air conditioning was on during the sitting. Prior to that, when the weather's a bit cooler, it was off. So we will pin that information up for you. Also, another request, both not always so easy, but which we ask here and elsewhere, that the entire area is a no-smoking zone. It always seems to me a little bit of a contrast, which I can barely stomach, of mindfulness of breathing in here and lighting up a fag, a cigarette outside for a quick... the two don't really go together very well. So we make it a no-smoking zone. And so sometimes they say the no-smoking zone extends for 100 kilometres. So it's not like no-smoking zone in the environment of the facility and then you go outside the gates. No, no, this is outside of 100 kilometres you can smoke. And some people, one of the intentions for coming on a retreat is to let go of this terrible habit. It is one of the most addictive substances. You know all this far better than I. And the cost on people's lives and on their families and loved ones is terrible. And I think it's an act of compassion to try to work with this particularly destructive thing. And there is no more successful multinational in the world at killing off its customers than the tobacco industry. And anything we can protest against it, I think, is worthwhile. So we ask for it to be a no-smoking zone while you are here. Sometimes, and especially I know in Israel, I think the population with the highest number per capita of the mobile phones there. And I was giving a public talk at another sister centre of ours in the United States. And in the middle of the talk, somebody's mobile phone went off. And the poor lady, I said, she went red. And she's scrambling around in the bag. And I said, look, don't worry. Answer the phone. We won't listen. We'll just sit here and we'll meditate till you've finished. But she wouldn't. She was picking up the phone. Not now, not now. Anyway. So we asked no use of the mobile phones unless it, you know, obviously is genuinely, genuinely important there. Some people like to do a little writing here. And again, please just keep it to your experience. Keep it to, say, what you have listened to, what is beneficial, rather than writing your entire autobiography. I'm sure it would sell far better than your last prime minister's. I hope it would. But nevertheless, rather minimal. So there's some kind of disciplines that take place here. Some of you have sat retreats and courses with other teachers, maybe connected with the insight meditation world or other teachers. One of the guidelines which you hear elsewhere but which we do not say here, and that is sometimes they say absolutely no eye contact. This is not a guideline here. So sometimes people express eye contact, it's fine, it's absolutely okay, but just remember that though you may, hopefully, may do, extend warmth, as it were, in the silence through your eyes to the eyes of somebody else, don't expect the law of return to be applying, and that what will come back to you is the same warmth and kindness. Sometimes it isn't. So long as one is clear about that, as well as not pursuing it, obviously. Yeah. So we do our practice in the silence with care and love and support for each other. A few other things which I would like to mention to you this evening. One of the very important things in the tradition is motivation. If you and I look into our inner life, our emotions and our feelings and our thoughts and what we say and what we do and the way that we live, and if you and I just pick out one feature of all the things that make up our emotions, our personality, our inner life, one important feature is motivation. And I'm sure there are occasions in your life and as in mine where we say something or we do something and we're completely misunderstood. And what we get back is negativity, backbiting, blame, people being judgmental about us, putting us down or whatever. And sometimes, you know, all that we can do is to turn our attention back to ourselves and say to ourselves, what was the motivation? Was the motivation for what I said or what I did coming from a clear place, a place of clarity or warmth or integrity? And so motivation matters a great deal, even if we're misunderstood. Motivation here is important, obviously, as well. The intention, and in the second link of the Eightfold Path of the teachings, right understanding, second link, right intention, right livelihood, right action, right speech, to live a noble way of life, the second one, intention matters. Our request, from Catherine, from Stephen, from myself, from the managers who put so much care and love to organize these events, is please stay for the 5 days, no matter what. To make that resolution and commitment there. Because sometimes, especially on the first day, and sometimes into the second day, for some people, everywhere else on the planet, anywhere else, will seem better than here. And some of you who are new to meditation, sometimes there is some restlessness which will come, as with others, some agitation, discomfort, and then the doubt will come, and then, I'm not ready for this, I can't do this, I'm no good at this, I'm too old for this, I'm too young for this, I'm too busy for this, I'm not busy enough for this, or whatever. And therefore, anywhere else will seem far, far better. Even the Gaza Strip will seem better. So, can we, in spite of some agitation and restlessness, some doubt that may come in, etc., which is so common, hang in, stay steady. If it is difficult, do come and find Stephen, find Catherine, find myself or whatever, and speak about the difficulty as I say, generally speaking, for most, the biggest test of intention and motivation is on the first or second day. It's not an easy process. Just finally, just with regard to other features here, there are a number of you who here who have experience with retreats before, and of course a great number of you who are new or relatively new. In terms of the day itself, it falls into three primary areas. Each one of the areas is equally important. First area is the meditation. We will give daily as clear and as comprehensive meditation instructions to you as possible. We want everything that you learn here to be applicable in many situations in your daily life. Not just for formal meditation, but in your working life, in your home life, in your life with a lover, in your life as a parent, in your life of aloneness, in your life of friendship and family. Many things we trust, which you listen to, which you apply here, you will see the very practical usefulness in daily life. And therefore, the body of teachings has a practical feature, very strong practical feature, and you'll recognize it, and we'll talk about it. So obviously, we want to encourage you as much as you can to sit and walk and stand and recline the four postures as much as possible. And so there's lots of silence, lots of encouragement to be right here and now as much as possible, and that constitutes part of the day. Second feature of the day are the meetings. These include small group meetings with the three of us. There are about 8 or 9 people in a group. It gives us the opportunity to ask how your day is, how your practices is, etc. You can ask us anything you wish to ask us, and obviously we hope we can respond well and clearly and helpfully. So there's regular small group meetings. We'll make space as well for one-to-one meetings, and people can sign up who wish to come. There's also in here, 3 times over the 5 days, the inquiry period. That takes place in the hall here, and with the inquiry period, I'll have communication with those who wish to look into things together, and hopefully a further contribution to insight and thus understanding. I'll speak to you about that, obviously, at the time. And finally, there is the evening talk. The evening talk lasts, generally speaking, for about 45 minutes. And those of you who have sat with any of the Asian teachers can feel immediately grateful, because some of the Asian teachers have a whole different meaning to what timelessness really means. And to give you a small example, I was in Germany speaking with some friends managing there, and this was a few months ago, and I said the longest talk that I had to listen to means a polite English understatement for endure, went on for 4.5 to 5 hours, started at 8 o'clock in the evening and finished with Ajahn Damodaran, my teacher in the monastery, at about 1 in the morning. It went on and on, a whole new feeling what eternity meant. And the person I was telling this to is a student. I'm not sure if I should mention a name, it might put you off. So anyway, he's a student of a Tibetan teacher. And he said, "Christopher, that's nothing. We were just in Italy with our Tibetan master, teacher. He started at 5, 6:30 in the afternoon and finished at 1:30 in the morning talking. So what's 45 minutes when you relate it to all of that? So the evening talk, important feature of this, have no interest in converting people. It's just not our cup of tea at all. The important thing with the teachings is they are and have one purpose. It's very simple: to point to living with wisdom. That's all. I'm not concerned if you consider yourself secular or religious or neither or both or was it just not because the wisdom element matters. So the teachings in the evening hopefully point to that, and naturally enough you have the right and opportunity with us to ask questions on what may be said in the small groups, or give feedback or make comment. That's important there. So if we put together fully and well our time here, the ethical foundations, awareness and meditation for insight, wisdom and the wisdom of the heart especially, all of that can make a significant contribution to genuinely enlightening our life, which is what the teachings are about. So at this time I'll what's the order of appearance of the class? Okay, so Catherine, I'm asking what's the order of appearance. So Catherine will speak to this time, and then Stephen, and then we'll have a short meditation together for about 10 minutes. I know some of you have travelled some distances to get here today, although it can't be that far. Israel's not that big a country, but anyway, you might well be feeling rather tired from the journey, etc. So continue flowing a little while with the talking. We'll have a short meditation and some rest.
So before I begin to speak, I just invite you to take an out-breath, as you've been sitting quite a long time here. Take an out-breath.